Four decades ago this past week, the first ever cases of the HIV/AIDS epidemic were publicly noted and hardly noticed. The Centers for Disease Control published a weekly report then, noting that five gay men in Los Angeles were sick with an unusual pneumonia-like infection. Two had died. By the end of that year, the CDC counted 270 confirmed cases of, quote, severe immune deficiency, the disease that later became known as AIDS, caused by the infection of HIV. Cases exploded around the world. It's estimated that about 35 million people have died from AIDS in the years since. William Brangham looks now at the progress made against the virus and the major problems that remain.
In the 1980s and early 90s, the AIDS epidemic was marked by two kinds of images. One we saw in public, activists taking to the streets, demanding not only action, but basic recognition that AIDS was real. President Reagan's administration often ignored the crisis. Reagan himself didn't publicly mention it for years. But the other was in private. In homes and in hospitals, patients, many of them gay men, wasting away from AIDS. The LGBTQ community lost a staggering number of friends and loved ones to the virus. With no medications or vaccine, contracting HIV back then was often a death sentence, a sentence shrouded with a thick blanket of stigma and denial. By the late 80s and early 90s, some small improvements. As well-known Americans tested positive and came forward, attitudes began to shift. And then, in the late 1980s, came the first antiretroviral drugs to treat HIV infection. A decade later, combinations of drugs proved the virus could not just be slowed, but suppressed. This huge shift meant people could survive, with HIV becoming a chronic but not fatal condition. But for years, those drugs were expensive and not available to people in sub-Saharan Africa. Millions died before new programs were launched to make those drugs more affordable and more widely available. Salim Abdul-Karim runs one of South Africa's leading HIV research centers.
It's not that we don't know what to do. It's a challenge of trying to do what we know works and to do it at a scale where it can really make a difference.
HIV treatment has undoubtedly saved millions. Nearly 38 million around the world today, more than 1.2 in the U.S., are living with HIV. 27 million of them get that treatment. But AIDS still takes its toll. Nearly 700,000 people died last year, and millions still don't get the life-saving access they need.
So for a look back at this epidemic and a look at the best way forward, we turn to two people who are deeply immersed in all of this. Chris Collins is the president and CEO of Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. And the Reverend Robert Newells is director of national programs at the Black AIDS Institute, an African-American-led research and advocacy group focused on ending HIV in Black communities. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for being here on this anniversary. Chris Collins, to you first. I grew up in San Francisco in the 80s. I lived in New York in the 90s. I have very distinct memories of this epidemic. For people who don't remember, can you just give us a snapshot of what it was like back then?
It was absolutely terrifying and tragic. I mean, I came out as gay a year before the MMWR was released. And as soon as that happened,
all of us— This was when the CDC first signaled that HIV was here.
That's right. And pretty soon everybody I knew was scared, worried for themselves, worried for all their friends. It was a mystery then of what was going on. And we saw our government not responding adequately to it. So it was a time of a great deal of fear, but also frustration and anger.
And Reverend Newells, the same question to you. Do you have an early memory of this epidemic that you could share with us?
Sure. I grew up in Oakland, just across the bay from San Francisco, but I was 10 years old 40 years ago. And what I remember was seeing white gay men on television suffering from this new disease. But in my community, it was really a secret. We didn't die of AIDS in those days. We died of pneumonia or cancer. So it was that stigma that kept people quiet about it. So I really didn't see it as a black disease at that time.
And we certainly know how that has changed since then. Chris Collins, as I mentioned in the introduction, so much progress has been made. We have drugs that treat HIV. We have drugs that prevent HIV. So great success on one hand, and yet still a lot of faltering going on globally.
Well, that's right. I mean, the progress has been incredible in terms of where the science has taken us. And just the mobilization that's been global to demand equity and scale up of things that work for people. But we're falling short in a lot of ways, as you say. You know, there's about a 10 million person treatment gap right now between the number of people living with HIV and those that are on treatment. And we're seeing increases in HIV infection in some parts of the world. And now, also because of neglect all over the world of marginalized people, people who are marginalized in their own societies, like gay men and other men who have sex with men, sex workers, people who inject drugs, trans people, others, you're seeing now an increasing share of infections are among those key population groups, those marginalized groups. And governments all over the world are criminalizing their behavior. Societies are make them outcasts, and that makes them more vulnerable, and it makes it also very tough for them to access services. So we've got to turn that around if we're going to begin to end this epidemic.
And Reverend Newells, we know that here in the United States that once HIV/AIDS sort of dropped off the front page, a lot of Americans thought, okay, we're done with that. But as your work certainly is a testament to, there is still a pocket where we have not figured out how to solve this in the U.S. Can you tell us a little bit about where HIV is still prevalent in America?
Sure. In Black and brown communities, much like everyone has talked about with the COVID pandemic, HIV and AIDS is still really prevalent among Black same gender loving men, Latino same gender loving men, and Black trans women specifically, and cisgender Black women. So I think, and in the Deep South, because that's where most Black people in this country live, the HIV epidemic seems to be centered in big urban areas. There's a big problem in rural areas as well that looks a lot like it looks in sub-Saharan Africa.
And Chris Collins, with regards to those particular populations, you often hear this term that they are hard to reach. But I've heard many activists say it's not about hard to reach. It's that we know what works. It's just a function of finding the political will to do better. Do you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, it is not easy to bring down HIV infection mortality rates, but we do know what to do. It's not rocket science. Communities around the world have actually dramatically driven down HIV incidence and mortality when they've gone to scale and reached everybody at risk. But what we've got in the United States now, really, if you look at the map of HIV incidence, it's a map of policy failure and the impact of racism in our society. It doesn't have to be that way. Line up the states with some of the highest HIV incidence against states that didn't take the Medicaid waiver for Obamacare, for example. You'll see the impact of policy, failure of health systems to be scaled so that they can reach everybody. That plays out in more severe HIV epidemics. We can turn this around, but it's going to take political commitment and the investment.
Reverend Newell, you touched on this earlier, but I wonder if you could talk a bit more about the issue of stigma, because that seems to be still such a big impediment to getting people to care and getting good care to people.
Sure. Stigma, both individualized stigma, community stigma, family stigma, faith-based stigma, can prevent folks from A, getting tested to even find out what your status is, and then B, getting treatment. It's not always all about access. Access is a big deal, but access doesn't mean uptake. And so if you feel stigmatized by going to get treatment or services, then the access doesn't really matter. You're not going to uptake those services.
So Chris Collins, the COVID pandemic has certainly shown us how a virus loose anywhere in the world can be a threat to everybody. Going forward, with regards to the fight against HIV, what do you think we ought to be doing? What are the next most important steps to take?
Well, we need to make sure we're reaching everybody. One of the priorities that came out of the high-level meeting at the United Nations just had was to say we've really got to work with governments around the world and get rid of negative laws that criminalize people's behavior and that marginalize them in communities. Doing that and getting tailored services to those populations is going to be essential. We've got to increase investment. This is another thing the UN called for this week. We're underinvesting in ending HIV. We could bring this epidemic to near an end, but we've been underinvesting for decades now.
Reverend Newell, same question to you. What do you think we have it within our power to end the HIV epidemic?
We absolutely have it within our power. I think some of the lessons we take from the COVID experience that we've all shared is that the messenger really does matter. If you're trying to reach folks that you're not used to reaching, you're not going to be successful. So we have to invest in Black leadership, Black folks, reaching Black folks. The messenger matters when addressing medical mistrust. The history of that and the lived present-day experience that folks have with medical racism, like those are things that contribute to this pandemic, and those are things that we have to hit head-on if we're going to end it for everyone by 2030, as the UN would like to do.
All right, Reverend Rob Newels and Chris Collins, thank you both for joining us on this anniversary. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.